This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks so much for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. A lot to talk about today, a new company to talk about, for one thing, and we'll give you information on that. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me, direct from Maine, live from Maine, from frigid Maine, is co-host Chris Teague. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Jack. It's not quite that cold, but it will be, I'm sure, again soon. How are things on your side of the world?
Things are very nice, and I hate to rub in the weather, but it's probably 70 degrees here today and sunny and quite nice. So maybe a little better than what you're dealing with in Maine. But on the other hand, you have the beauty of nature. And you told me right before we started to record about nature in the backyard of your new house. Tell us about that.
We found out that we have a pair of nested bald eagles that live in our backyard in the trees behind our house. And we're advised to not let small pets run free. But thankfully, my dog is quite heavy. So
yeah,
I don't think he's getting carried away anytime soon.
Yeah, and you mean literally carried away. And that was kind of a horrendous thing to think about. But I'm glad that won't happen. Of course, Chris writes for Ford Authority, Forbes, Driving Today. I write for Driving Today and Forbes and Auto Bytel and several others. So we're covering the waterfront for you, or the car front, I guess, for you from a lot of different publications. This week, our special guest is Andreas Henricks. He is the chief executive officer of a company called Digital Motors. And he's going to give us a behind-the-scenes look at how car dealers are changing to operate in a world of higher consumer expectations. I think we all have higher expectations. We'll see whether they are dashed or not. But the way retailing has evolved, car retailing is also evolving. So we'll talk to him about that. Interesting guy, interesting point of view. In the car review segment, Chris will give us his opinion on what vehicle, Chris?
The 2021 Hyundai Ioniq. Plug-in hybrid, I should say.
Ah, cool. And one of the few car brands and car names that ends in the letter Q. So that's important. And I was driving the 2021 Nissan Armada, heavily revised version of the Armada, full-size sport utility. So of interest, I think, to a lot of folks, a lot of family folks who listen into the show. Before we do any of that, though, let's get into automotive news from the week. What can you tell us is shaking auto-wise, Chris?
Well, I think it's a pretty big shake this time around. Many people have probably heard about the proposed merger between Fiat Chrysler, so that's FCA, and Peugeot, or the PSA brand, the group of brands in the French group of companies there. I guess there are others than just French companies. But that has finally gone through, and we now have a company called Stellantis. It is not a pharmaceutical or a drug. Ask your doctor if Stellantis is right for you. But that umbrella now holds 14 brands, Jack. Do you know what they are?
I don't, but I can name a few of them because I can name some FCA brands probably pretty easily.
Yeah. There are a bunch. Sorry.
But I Peugeot, is Simca still a brand? Is Simca still available overseas there?
So they've got Abarth, Alfa Romeo, Chrysler, Citroen, Dodge, DS, Fiat, Jeep, Lancia, Maserati, Opel, Peugeot, Ram, and Vauxhall. So quite
wow.
The portfolio.
Yeah, so Opel, so those former GM brands are now part of this thing, and they had been acquired by PSA Group when everything started to go to hell in a handbasket not that long ago, I guess, several years ago. For General Motors, but interesting. Well, when you combine two companies like that, and FCA, I think, is still getting over being combined as Chrysler with Fiat, it really jolts the culture, I think, in the company. We'll have to see how that all unfolds.
I think it will, but ultimately, if it keeps those brands around longer here, and Jeep is a ticket to print money for anybody who owns it, but for the other brands, and then it would be nice to see a few new names in the country here, but anything to keep them healthy and plodding along, I'm happy with.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to see them healthy and do more than plodding along, but actually be robust. Well, it'll be interesting to see if we get French-built cars back in the United States. I remember French-built cars, and I actually remember traveling to France and testing cars over there. Some of my fondest memories in this business are doing that. I mean, there's something nice about going to Paris, sometimes on the Concorde, and then testing cars, staying in the Crillon in Paris, and then testing cars from there. I did that more than once. So I'd like to see that happen again. Staying probably at the Crillon is possible. Riding on the Concorde, not so much.
Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting to see where they go with that, and if they introduce it, where they introduce it in the market, right? Is it, you know, pushing premium brand, or is it going to be kind of a mid-range where they're going to land with some of the models they, if they bring any over at all? So I'd really love to see that.
Yeah, there was some talk about bringing the Peugeot brand back to the United States, and, you know, this has put that on hold, I think, but or maybe it will accelerate it. I guess we'll have to see what happens. I think a lot to be determined yet as this is all shaking out. And apparently the halls at FCA are fairly quiet. I talked to one of my friends over there today, so there are no pink slips going around, so I guess they're happy about that.
You know, I guess from Dodge's point of view, it's just a whole new portfolio of vehicles to stick a Hellcat motor into, so it's better for them.
Yeah, and why not? You know, a 790 horsepower Peugeot or DS or something like that, we're charge ahead with that. Well, one of the things that's been going on during the pandemic, and it may be counterintuitive, is that the pandemic has apparently been good for EV sales and plug-in hybrid sales. Not so much here, but in Europe. This is a report from EVvolumes.com, their data center that we just checked into. And they are expecting battery electric vehicles plus the plug-in hybrid sales to be 3.24 million when 2020 is all totaled up, as opposed to what happened in 2019, which was 2.6 million units. So you have this major economic downturn, and it particularly affected Europe, and yet EV sales and PHEV sales are up. So and up big. I mean, that's 137% gain.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, that's hard to wrap my mind around. I would say, you know, if that's the same were held true here, it could be people realizing that their commute might not be as long and they're trying to downsize or, you know, move into a fuel efficient vehicle. But they do have stronger, more stringent fuel economy standards there that could be part of the driving factor. I don't know how the pricing lines up there versus traditional combustion engines, but as you say, it does sound a little counterintuitive on the surface.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, that Europe has displaced China as the place for largest growth among EVs and PHEVs. One thing that is going to happen next is the number one, the first production version of the 2021 Ram 1500 TRX, the super truck that we've talked a bit a lot about here on the program, is going to be auctioned by Barrett Jackson. It's going to be auctioned for charity on the 26th of March at their Scottsdale auction, which usually is earlier but has been put off based on COVID-19. Barrett Jackson is going to waive all fees, so 100% of the sale price will benefit the United Way of Southeastern Michigan.
Good for them.
It's a nice thing. And it's interesting. It used to be that cars would go on sale and they wouldn't be collector's cars for some years. And now we're seeing cars, even before they're on sale, become collector's cars, go to Barrett Jackson auction and gather big dollars. And the fact that it's being big dollars for charity, I think, is the best part of it.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that particular vehicle, depending on what the sale price ends up being, will be driven all that much. I've got one coming next week, so I'm quite excited about that. But there have been a few vehicles you mentioned recently that have gone for big dollars, but thankfully a lot of that, if not all of the profit from those sales, went to charity as well. So good to see.
Yeah, hear, hear. And it'll be interesting to see as auctions crank up again, as we hopefully are exiting the pandemic, what that does to collector car prices. Is there pent-up demand, or are people going, well, I'm not sure about this anymore. I don't know that we need to do that. It'll be interesting to see how that unfolds.
I agree.
Well, here's something that will definitely unfold, and it is Volkswagen. They're going to quit the production of the Golf, at least for the United States, certainly not for the world. It's, I think, their biggest seller or among their biggest sellers. Nearly 2.5 million Golf models have been sold in the United States since 1974. Of course, the first ones were called Rabbit here, as opposed to Golf. But I think this just indicates that the hatchback style is not of interest to American buyers.
And it's a shame, too, because the Golf was and probably will continue to be a great, fun-to-drive little car. We will see the GTI and the Golf R coming back, though. So there is some interest in the performance side of the model.
Yeah, and so in some ways, it's maybe a fib to say that they're not going to make Golfs for the United States. I guess they're not making Golfs in North America anymore. Most of the Golfs, if not all of the Golfs that we get here or are on sale here, are made in Puebla in Mexico, outside Mexico City. I happened to go through that plant once upon a time, so back in the deep, dark recesses of time. But things go forward, and we're going to – the Jetta, based on the same platform, is the popular one here.
I actually had a Mexican-made Jetta. It was quite a great car. I loved it.
Good. Well, when we come back, we will be reviewing some cars. We'll be talking about the 2021 Hyundai Ioniq, and we'll also be taking a look at the 2021 Nissan Armada, that full-size sport utility. So with Chris Teague, Jack Nierad with you, we thank you so much for being with us, and stay with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nierad with you, and we are very pleased that you're with us. We really do appreciate the fact that you're joining us here on America on the Road, and it is road test time. We live to drive, and we drove some, I think, somewhat unusual vehicles for us this time around. Chris, you were driving the Hyundai Ioniq. Tell us more.
It is a little bit unusual for me. I don't see a lot of hybrids and plug-in hybrids up here. I would say largely due to the weather. It's just not the best time to be testing these vehicles. But I am testing a plug-in hybrid in the middle of January in Maine. This is the 2021 Ioniq. It's the plug-in hybrid limited trim. The price tag lands at just over $34,000, which includes a $955 destination charge. And one of the most noticeable things about this car is just how normal it looks. I know, you know, when the Prius came out years and years and years ago, one of the things that people lamented about it was that it looked too futuristic for its time, and still continues to look funky, but it's definitely fitting in more now. But the Ioniq looks just like a normal Hyundai. You know, if you didn't know better, you would see it roll by and you assume Elantra or maybe Sonata, you know, just kind of from a quick glance. And that's a great appeal for it because, it really fits in with everything else and doesn't make you feel like you're, you know, advertising to the world that you drive a hybrid. This car has a 1.6-liter gasoline engine paired with a 44.5-kilowatt electric motor. The total output is 139 horsepower, and it certainly doesn't feel like it has even that much, at least not on the highway. Around town, this is a great car for scooting in and out of traffic. It's very compact, so it works well in parking spots and tight streets. But, man, reaching highway speeds takes a while, and maintaining highway speeds takes a little bit of concentration. You have to keep your foot down to keep going the speed that you want to if you're not using cruise control. I will say that the regenerative braking is nice. It's easy to slow down to almost one pedal driving. So, you know, kind of lift off and brake, but it's not quite as strong as the braking effect that's something like a Tesla has. This car is packed with technology. It's a 10.25-inch touchscreen with navigation, Harman Kardon premium audio system, Sirius XM radio, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. And it also has Hyundai's BlueLink services, so you can control different vehicle functions and check on like the oil health from your smartphone. And you can set the climate controls and remote start and things like that. So very convenient. I won't get to test it because I don't want to hook my phone up here, but the demos have made it look very tempting in terms of a technology feature. Full suite of safety tech, so forward collision alerts, highway driving assist, high beams, automatic high beams, lane follow assist, blind spot monitors, and more. And it's just a really comfortable car. All the technology works cohesively. Hyundai's touchscreen software, their infotainment software, is intuitive. It's simple. It's not overly fanciful and doesn't have a lot of animations that make it hard to use while you're driving. The back seat is spacious for two kids, especially now that they're both in booster seats. And the front seats are wide and, you know, they're deep. I wish they were a little bit more supportive. It does feel a little bit like I'm sitting on a small bench seat up here. But overall, a comfortable car. Hyundai advertises 52 miles per gallon. I've been averaging around 50 the past couple of days, and that's a lot of highway driving. So all in all, I'd say it's a great car for someone who needs great fuel economy and plenty of interior space. It compares well with the Civic and the Corolla. Although, you know, there's the gas mileage here is a little bit better, and I think the Civic is more fun to drive, but it compares well, especially for the money.
Yeah, and there are special offers on Ioniq models right now, very compelling offers, actually, a lot of money on that vehicle right now. So if you have any kind of hankering at all for something other than the norm, I think the Ioniq is certainly one to take a look at. There are a lot of things to like about it. It's one of those cars where you kind of don't exactly get what segment it fits in, or it's not immediately intuitive to you where it fits in the whole lineup or where it fits in the whole scheme of the 350 cars that are available in the United States. But I think it is a bargain and something to pay attention to. Not for everybody, certainly, but I think for the right person, the Ioniq is a hot ticket.
Absolutely. I agree.
Well, I was driving the 2021 Nissan Armada. It is a very heavily revamped version of their full-size sport utility vehicle. This is another vehicle I think that maybe gets overlooked sometimes. A lot of people think of, say, the Chevy Tahoe or the Ford Expedition as this size vehicle, and might not be paying as much attention to the Armada as they should, because I think there's a lot to like about this vehicle. There's something a bit premium about it, and this time around it has more standard horsepower than any other vehicle in the segment, 400 horsepower from its 5.6 liter V8 engine. So that's strong, 413 pound-feet of torque. It also enables it to tow pretty significantly, 8,500 pound maximum tow capacity. And Nissan's stressing that a little more with this version of the Armada. It has an integrated trailer brake controller and trailer sway control. You didn't see that so much before. So I think Nissan's making a big play in this big segment. It's a big segment. The cars are big, the vehicles are big, and the segment is relatively big, and I think pretty profitable for those companies that are in this segment. There aren't a bazillion choices among full-size rear drive or all-wheel drive SUVs, so it's worthy of more than a look. It has a ton of enhanced safety features. It has the Nissan 360 safety suite, which is filled with stuff. The Safety Shield 360 has automatic emergency braking with pedestrian detection, blind spot warning, rear cross traffic alert, rear departure warning is something completely different, I think. And then you have high beam assist and rear automatic braking, which prevents you from banging into things, which is wise. Intelligent cruise control, a full speed range. It's got a lot of stuff, in other words. And pretty accommodating inside. Like I say, it sends a bit of a premium message, I think, versus some of the other cars in this class, partly because it's from an import brand, and I think the interior is a bit different than you see in the domestic. So overall, with seating for up to 8 passengers, I think there's a lot to like about the Armada, and probably worthy of consideration if you're looking for a full-size SUV. Is that something you might be looking for with the size of your family, Chris?
We will eventually. I don't think we're going to go full-size, though. I think we might go mid-size, but I like what Nissan has done. They made a good push for 21 with the Armada. The styling has made it look a lot more formal and grown up than it did before. And you said that, you know, as you said, premium. So it definitely looks the part. And the price tag, you know, it tops out at just under 70 grand. So, you know, before I might have complained about that price, but you can easily spend that much on like an Expedition or anything in the segment too. So they've done a great job bumping the power and adding the new tech. Like you said, it's got plenty of stuff inside of it. So I can't wait to drive it.
Yeah, it was fun to drive. It feels a little smaller than it actually is, which is a good thing, I think, in a vehicle. It feels more nimble than maybe some of the other vehicles in the segment. So, again, the 2021 Nissan Armada, something interesting and worth taking a look at.
Absolutely.
So those are our two vehicles, the Hyundai Ioniq, and you were driving the plug-in hybrid trim, is that correct?
Correct.
And you gave it high marks, and I was driving the Nissan Armada for 2021. So two vehicles, maybe, I wouldn't say obscure, but not certainly in the middle of the mainstream or on the bestseller list, that are certainly worth taking a look at in those two segments. And when we come back, and which we intend to do, we will have listener questions. So keep a question for us, send a question to us, and we'll be back with that. With Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you. Thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad with you, and it is question and answer time here on America on the Road. We love this segment because we learn things during the week as we report on cars, and then we can report them to you in question and answer time. We'd love to take your question. It's easy to get it to us. Email us at editor@drivingtoday.com, editor@drivingtoday.com, and we'll answer your question on an upcoming show. And Chris, I think you have a listener question for us right now, don't you?
I do. This listener has a question about their car making a funny sound. They say when they start their car, they hear a grinding noise, and they want to know what that noise could mean to them. Is it a problem, or is it something they can ignore?
I wouldn't ignore the grinding noise. Even when I grind my teeth, I'm not supposed to ignore it. I would say don't do that. But there is something to be said for understanding what a noise means. And a good mechanic can usually hear the noise, or you can describe the noise to him or her, and then that person can give you a good idea of what's wrong. And in this case, grinding upon start is something different than a grinding noise, say when you're turning a corner, or something that's not a grinding noise. It's another kind of noise, like a screeching noise or a clicking noise or something like that. So first things first, let's talk a bit about what the grinding noise probably isn't. And one of the things it probably isn't is a battery problem. What a grinding noise probably is a problem with the starter. If you turn the key or push the starter button and you hear a click, 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 like that, that's probably a battery problem, or it could be an alternator problem. But if you turn the key or push the button and hear a grinding noise, and you know, something like eggshells in the garbage disposer, or even worse, a spoon in the garbage disposer, that's more than likely a problem with the starter. And there's a few problems that it can be, one of which is the solenoid is not helping the starter engage and disengage from the flywheel properly, and so it grinds. You actually have gears that come together between the starter motor and which is actually an electric motor, and the flywheel. The starter motor spins the flywheel, and that's what starts the car or enables the car to start. If those gears are not meshing correctly, and sometimes they are meshing so badly that some of the gears are broken off, then you're going to get this grinding noise. The car might start. It might not start immediately. You might hear grinding noise, and then the car starts. It's a problem, and the fix to that is typically to replace the starter. You don't want to, you possibly could replace pieces on the starter, but the logical thing to do is replace the entire starter as a package. It's not that hard, it's not that expensive, and that should do the trick for you and relieve you of this grinding noise. When you hear it and the car still starts, don't be lulled into sleeping and thinking, oh, well, there's no problem, because it's indicating that there will be a problem, typically. At some point, the starter will not engage at all, and you won't be able to start the car, and you'll be sitting there. And if you're sitting there in Maine when it's below zero, you won't be liking things very much at all, will you?
You have plenty of time to wish that you had repaired your starter when it first started making the noise.
Yeah, absolutely true. So that's our listener question. Like we say, we would love to have you send us your listener question, and we'll answer it on an upcoming show. It doesn't have to be a mechanical question. It could be about a car you want to buy or are thinking about buying. We certainly review those. And anything automotive, we'd love to hear about that. Maybe you have a historical thing about cars you'd like to know about. I do a little car history on the side, and I'd love to talk to you about that. So all of those things are available right here on America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you. And when we come back, we will be interviewing Andreas Henriks. He is the CEO of a company called Digital Motors. He's going to be talking about how car dealers are changing for the better to make things just better for consumers. So stay with us for that. This is Jack Nerad, and again, I'm with Chris Teague right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. This is Jack Nerad back with you, and we have a really special guest for you. Really interesting guy working in an interesting business. His name is Andy Henriks. He is heading a company called Digital Motors. Andy, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much, Jack.
Tell us about Digital Motors. This seems like a very eventful year for a company like yours. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. Well, Digital Motors essentially is an online sales platform that gives any retailer of a traditional brand the ability to sell a car just like Tesla does with an end-to-end online process. And I guess the sad reality is the only way to buy a new car today is if it's a Tesla. So Digital Motors set out to change it, and I guess we're in the right place at the right time with the right product.
So when did you begin this process? Because it was before COVID-19, but I think certainly COVID-19, it seems to me, probably accelerated your progress pretty significantly. Talk a bit about that, would you?
You know, Digital Motors has been 2 years in the working. You know, COVID certainly is a significant accelerant to Digital Motors, but it's not the root cause. All the industries have gone to, outside of automotive, have gone to fully transactional over the past 20 years, and auto is the only one that's stuck in lead gen, and that's something we set out to change, my co-founder and I, about 2 years ago. And after, I would say, a year and a half of development, we launched the platform earlier this year when the shutdown first hit.
So it made all the sense in the world to launch at that point. Did you accelerate your launch because of the shutdowns? Is that something that moved it forward?
Actually, yeah. Our original plan was to launch in the summer of 2020. And, you know, then these unprecedented shutdowns happened, and we had a number of dealers begging us to help them. So we launched the platform a full 3 months early. And, right out of the gate, customers embraced this new process and the platform started selling cars even at the depth of the first shutdown that happened in the spring.
Yeah, and dealers have been remarkably resilient, using systems like yours to deal with an absolutely unprecedented situation. Can you describe to us what the customer experience is like? Because, you know, certainly a car transaction is much more complicated than buying a pair of shoes or something like that online. Talk to us about that, would you?
Absolutely. And that's the complexity. You know, what Digital Motors does is we create plug-and-play online stores that are a natural extension of the physical showroom of the dealer. So the customer is able to identify the right car from a dealer's inventory based on certain search criteria. They can structure a lease and finance payment, value their trade-in, select the right finance and insurance product, get instantly approved by one or multiple lenders subject to the dealer's preference, and they can schedule their delivery online. So end-to-end, it takes about 15 minutes what traditionally takes 3 to 5 hours at the dealership.
Yeah, and talk about a satisfier. It's just incredibly satisfying to be able to do that. Of course, I think there's probably some potential stumbling blocks that you had to overcome, right? I mean, typically a vehicle does not have a single price. That's certainly one of them. There's negotiation involved. And then there's, of course, the whole financing thing, depends entirely upon the individual purchaser's credit history and their credit rating. So tell us a bit about how you were able to solve those things.
Absolutely. Virtually 100% of all new car buyers need leasing or financing, and about 2/3 of all used car buyers rely on financing to afford the purchase. Now, if you look at the new car side in particular, this is a hyper-competitive market, and it's actually a myth that negotiation gets you anywhere. Ultimately, what matters is the monthly payment that you get approved by a lender, and then you end up paying out of your monthly budget. So getting the deal to a penny-perfect, lender-approved monthly lease or finance payment, that's really the magic that we solved in a very convenient way while offering the dealership incremental profit opportunities. So it's not so much about how do we take what the industry refers to as the four-hour grind and put this online, and there's a lot of haggling back and forth online. No, it's a much simpler process to get to the approved penny perfect payment that ultimately matters most. And in structuring this payment, the biggest influences are actually the discounts and rebate programs that are available from OEMs and lenders across the nation. And if you figure those in correctly, that's what gets you to the most attractive monthly payment for the consumer, and at the same time, an attractive margin for the dealer.
Right. Well, does the dealer then set his margins and it operates one price from there, or is there still some negotiation involved in a typical transaction using the Digital Motors platform?
Yeah, so a typical Digital Motors transaction, there's no negotiation involved. The dealer puts a solid foot forward. That doesn't mean race to the bottom or bare bottom, rock bottom pricing, but put a solid foot forward. And from there, we layer on the different marketing campaigns, incentive programs, the lending programs, enhanced residual values, for instance, and get the customer to the deal. And one of the biggest misconceptions out there is that the more control you give to the customer, this is actually bad for business. And what we see on a daily basis is the more control you give to the customer over the transaction, the higher your profit margin is, and the happier the customer is at the same time. So the dealer walks away with a better margin, the customer feels fully empowered and is in control of the process, everybody saves time, and there's virtually zero buyer's remorse afterwards.
Yeah, my sense is that a lot of consumers will upsell themselves and actually accept products or buy products that if it were forced upon them or presented to them, I guess is a better way to put it, by an F&I mm-hmm. manager, they're much less likely to purchase. Has that been your experience? Talk a bit about that.
Absolutely. So, we recently launched a new client, and the very first transaction that happened was a used car purchase, where the customer self-selected about $7,000 worth of finance and insurance products. Now, those products, serve a valuable role, but the customer sold themselves on those products, and the delivery of the vehicle actually was boiled down to 20 minutes at the dealership. So the dealer was elated, customer was happy, and it's putting the customer in control that is the magic here, and that drives profit and satisfaction.
So my sense is you put guardrails around each purchase, right? The dealer would set up things like the margin that they want from this. Some variables would be certainly the credit rating of the individual customer that has to be accommodated. And that strikes me as that's probably maybe the most difficult part of this. Is it indeed?
Actually, so the system that we've built is a highly complex intelligent fintech engine. And that indeed has guardrails, so customers can only put together sensible deals. But at the same time, the dealer's in full control of the economics of this process, just like they are in their physical showroom. So the retail experience that we're attempting to emulate at Digital Motors is that of Apple. Apple is completely channel agnostic. It doesn't matter if you put the entire deal together on the online store for Apple for your next iPad or iPhone purchase, or if you do put parts of the deal together online, or if you do everything at the respective retail store. Same philosophy holds true with Digital Motors. You can do the entire deal online at the dealer's terms and conditions. You can do parts of the deal online and get yourself comfortable with the payment scenarios and everything else, and then seamlessly finish the transaction at the dealership. Or you can even start the transaction at the dealership and finish it at home if you like. So ultimately, this gives retailers a huge boost in efficiency and customers a lot of empowerment. But Digital Motors is not the consumer-facing brand here. We're the technology platform that enables this experience. And we consider our clients' online stores, their stores that they own and operate at the pricing that they see fit.
Right. And they have all their branding. It is identified as their stores as opposed to a Digital Motors experience or going to Digital Motors. They're experiencing, you know, XYZ Motors in their local community. Right.
Exactly. And the way we've built the platform, it's hyper configurable. We actually can create something that looks like a custom online store for a particular dealership or dealer group in about 24 hours without writing a single line of code. And we're able to emulate any franchise branding for any OEM or custom branding for the dealership. So the ultimate result is not only something that resembles the branding of the dealership, lives on the dealership website domain, but also the feature set that can be configured to each individual dealer's needs. So for instance, you know, do you want the trade-in step activated? What F&I products would you like to put in your menu? What are your preferred providers? Do you like to quote trade-in pricing based on Kelley Blue Book, Black Book, or JD Power? All these things are decisions that our clients make, and we just configure that accordingly in our system. So it's really their store that we operate based on our technology.
Andy, are you providing data science to them for pricing, or are they in totally responsible for their pricing? I mean, you talked about penny perfect pricing, and you know that rings a bell with me. I know the market scan people pretty well.
Yeah.
Talk to me a bit about that.
So the penny perfect pricing, there's no such thing as one penny perfect payment. It all depends on, you know, the term of the deal, what vehicle you select, what your credit worthiness is, and so forth. But ultimately, to get to the penny perfect payment scenario for any given customer transaction, if you marry the vehicle, the incentive programs, a lender approval with a particular VIN at a particular dealership, then you're very well able to get to this penny perfect payment. And it eliminates the element of surprise of, you know, can I afford this car once it's translated into a monthly payment or not? All this ambiguity is taken out of the process. Now, in terms of data feedback, obviously we see in real time what customers are doing, what price points are effective, what F&I menu selections are preferred. And all this data we play back to our dealer clients so they can optimize their online store performance. So data is really kind of the hidden gem here that, contrary to a physical retail outlet where you have to just, I guess, observe and survey the process, here you see it in real time down to every single transaction of what works well and what doesn't work. And you can optimize the experience by making changes in real time.
Right. Another potential stumbling block, I think, in getting to a price that you can transact at and a monthly payment that you can transact at, all of which you have to do. I mean, that's it's required, as you so well know, to make this online transaction work, is local fees and taxes and all of that stuff. How do you approach all that? Because, you know, that's a critical portion of it, and yet it's hidden to most people, and potentially a big dissatisfier when people are struck with, oh, here's a price different than what I expected, and it's largely because of tax. Talk about that, would you?
Yes. So sales tax, titling and registration fees are all figured into our monthly payment calculation from step one. So when you start structuring a deal in our online store's vehicle details page, you're immediately able to, you know, layer on sales tax and registration fees. So the payment that you see from the get-go is already very close to penny perfect. And once you go through the credit approval step, it is penny perfect. So that's the whole notion of, you know, we don't just want to be a widget that gives you an indication that's kind of rough. We want to give you the deal. And that's the huge difference. If you look at the, you know, quote unquote, digital retailing space, it's littered with widgets that do fragmented portion of the purchase experience and ultimately all result in lead gen. And at Digital Motors, we took a unique approach. We said, you know, let's follow other industries that have created the ability to transact online the entire distance. And whatever result you arrive at online does not change when you take physical delivery of the good or service that you purchased. So same applies here. What you see is what you get, and that includes all the fees and taxes off the deal.
As this moves forward, you talked a little bit about starting a deal and at home and in your pajamas on the couch. You didn't say that, but I did, which is something you could do, and then going into the dealership and consummating the deal or any way you want to do it and being able to pick up that deal along the way. Talk a little bit about the importance of that, because I think there's a critical nature to that.
Yes, I agree with you. So, you know, at Digital Motors, we do not believe that there is going to be a hard cutover from the traditional offline process to everything all of a sudden occurring online. What we clearly identified is virtually every single car buyer has an express need to do more online than they traditionally were able to do. Whether this means structuring the entire deal or parts of the deal doesn't really matter. They just want to have a better understanding by the time they contact the dealer or visit the dealer physically, that they already have a good understanding of their deal. Now, in addition to the online store, we have built what we call our dealer sales portal. And that gives the dealer real-time visibility into what transactions are in progress and are taking place on the dealer's respective individual online store. So at any point in time, is the dealer able to pick up the thread and meaningfully move the ball forward from where the customer left off online? And in my mind, that's very important because a lot of customers are not yet comfortable making such a significant purchase entirely online. But again, before they engage with the dealership, they want to have a much better understanding of what deals they're looking at. So what we see is the customers that, you know, statistically, if you're a car buyer visiting the dealership for the first time, more than 50% buy a car on the first visit in a very short amount of time if they've played around on the online store beforehand to get a better understanding of the deal itself. So customers are no longer coming in, just kicking tires, taking test drives, and being kind of non-committal. By the time they walk in after, you know, getting the transparency on the online store, they're ready to do the deal.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of things they can do online that might potentially be embarrassing for them to do in the dealership, right? I mean, they can get a sense of what they can afford. They can get a sense of their payments. They can do that without the pressure of sitting in a little cubby somewhere in a dealership. It's probably a much more comfortable experience for them. And then, as you mentioned, when they walk into the dealership, if they're along the way, they are essentially a much easier customer to close than somebody who is just an up and walks in the door with, you know, no prior knowledge of any of this.
Exactly. Now, I'm not so sure if it's always the element of embarrassment, but the creditworthiness of an individual customer makes a huge difference in the payment, or can make a huge difference. And why not give them that visibility up front, so the dealer doesn't always have to be the bearer of bad news, well into the purchase process at the dealership. And, you know, if you know that your credit is less than stellar, you configure the deal accordingly in the online store, you get comfortable with the payment scenario, and this element of surprise is gone now by the time you visit the dealer, because you know that you will have to pay a somewhat higher interest rate than somebody that has outstanding credit. So it's more about transparency that drives the consumer trust and confidence and desire to transact. But the flip side of it all is the dealer has a much more or can provide a much more pleasant experience to the customer, because they don't have to then explain that their credit is insufficient for the payment that they originally targeted. Plus, you know, consummating these deals takes a lot less time, yet they tend to be more profitable, these deals. So, you know, dealers are well advised to give the reins to the consumer via a Digital Motors powered online store, because that drives efficiency just as much, if not more, as it does profitability.
Yeah, absolutely. It strikes me that by establishing the various guardrails, this information could be of good use by salespeople within the stores. Largely, what you're constructing is something that gives the consumer maybe more information than the typical salesperson has. Am I right? Talk a bit about that.
Actually, this reminds me of a use case that we did not originally anticipate, but what we see play out every day. You know, in certain instances, salespeople have just as difficult a time, getting to a monthly payment quote as the consumer. So what we have found initially, much to our surprise, is that the online store is not only popular with the dealership's consumers and customers, but it's very popular with their sales team as well. Because now, you know, picture this, you're taking a customer on a test drive, and rather than just talking vaguely about the overall price tag of the vehicle, you can actually sit in the passenger seat and start putting together the monthly payment scenario and you know, have a much more meaningful and deeper conversation with the customer and get them comfortable while they're excited driving the car. You can say, yeah, this is going to be $399 a month on a 36-month lease.
And the good news there is you're giving them a real price, right? I mean, the consumer is receiving a real price, not some approximation that might then go completely off the rails, when they get back into the store.
Exactly. And, you know, ultimately, the purchase price of a vehicle doesn't really matter if you're a leasing or finance customer, because there's so many other variables figured into the deal that it's kind of pointless to take a simple, you know, calculation to arrive at a monthly payment, because by the time you layer on all the incentive programs, which are quite commonplace, the monthly payment will look vastly different from, you know, the initial back of the envelope calculation. So why not take, you know, a computer to do all the heavy lifting right on the spot and be able to quote your customer a reliable monthly payment? That's the first impression.
Well, Andy Henricks of Digital Motors, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Andreas Henricks. He is the CEO of Digital Motors. I think fascinating stuff that they're putting together. And the way the car dealers are changing these days is very, very interesting. And I think great for the consumer. I'd also like to thank Chris Teague for again co-hosting with us. Thanks so much for being with us, Chris.
Thank you so much for having me, Jack, and thank you everyone who is listening. And I will say that if you enjoy what you heard and you want to hear more, go ahead and hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. That'll help us continue to grow and get in front of more people.
Yes, indeed. And we'd like to be in front of more people as long as they are not pointing guns at us. And frequently they don't. I think most often they don't. So that's a good thing. We would also encourage you to look, or I would encourage you, I don't know whether Chris will or not, but maybe he has to, encourage you to look at my book, The GR Factor, or look for my book. It's available at bookstores the world over, at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, et cetera, et cetera. The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule, something we believe in quite definitely here on America on the Road. So check that out. You might also want to check out another podcast by some friends of ours. It's called the In Wheel Time podcast. They're based in Texas, real nice people. So check that out, In Wheel Time, their podcast. They have a lengthy podcast, actually, and I think they're on YouTube. So give that a listen and come back and listen with us when Chris Teague and I get together next time around for another edition of America on the Road.